we're going to hit up your list right now. At number five, you had 28 Days Later. That was also another thing I listened to right before we got on here. I forgot how good it was.
Hey, I was trying to think about a little bit outside of the box, and I was like, you know what? Let me think of some scenes from movies, and then take out the soundtrack. Now, if it's still a good scene without it, okay. But if you need the soundtrack to be in there, then it's probably the soundtrack. And yeah, like I think about to like that whole ending sequence, and I'm like, if you take the music out of that, that just falls apart, and it's kind of people will be like, what the fuck's going on here? But you put the music in and you just watch that, then it really adds the heft to it.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment. You know, 28 days later and what was it? 28 weeks later, right? Like yep. Those were the two. Those really were, I don't know, they were game changers really at the time on the zombie, you know, genre. So, they were really, really, really good. And I remember the first time I watched 28 Days Later, I was so tired. I was like, I just want to watch it. So I got through like the first 15 minutes and I was like, I need to watch it some other time. But even like the first 15 minutes was really fucking good. Like it hooks you really early. It was really good stuff.
I mean, it's almost like, outside of the laboratory stuff, like a recreation of the beginning of The Walking Dead, and then you just look at like the two different directions they went in, and it's, you know, interesting to compare.
Absolutely, and hell, Walking Dead, if everything is per AMC, they're looking to do stuff for the next 10 plus years, including a spinoff in another country. So we could even possibly, and if they're going to do another country, they're probably going to do an English-speaking country, you would assume. So I would say England has to be a very good possibility, or Australia. Those would be my two guesses. You know, so.
Yeah, and a lot of it's just going to depend on, you know, demographics and how much they want to spend and whatnot. So I could see some, I mean, we see so much Western, you know, zombie stuff. I think it would be really interesting to see like a zombie outbreak in, like, especially like a more populous country, kind of like what he got into in the beginning of World War Z, the book, but like in India or, you know, communist China, something over there.
Sure. I mean, hell, I think that was half the appeal of Train to Busan was, I don't even remember what the fuck country it was.
Oh, it was Korea. But yeah, I mean, that was, you know, seeing a dude go hand to hand with zombies was pretty fucking awesome. I'll give him that. So,
absolutely. All right. Moving on, you had Exorcist, Saw, Halloween, and Jaws. All things we've already discussed. Then honorable mention, you had Nightmare on Elm Street, and then you had two films that nobody else brought up, and I saw them, and I was immediately jealous that I hadn't thought of either one of them.
No, I felt
so
pretty awesome when I thought of those.
Terminator was the first of the two. Really good call, man. I was like, God damn it, why didn't I think of that? So,
I mean, maybe because, like, the Terminator, I mean, the first one was the only one I would even come close to remotely classifying as a horror movie. You know, the rest of them became more action sci-fi. But, I mean, I remember, you know, especially, like, listening to my parents, you know, talk about, like, how scary it was, the fact that you couldn't stop this thing, you know, no matter what. Even when they melted it and the skin came off, it was still crawling through the fucking thing. It wasn't until they crushed it in the press that she was able to feel safe.
It's interesting because, you know, that was such a weird time for, every decade is weird for sci-fi, but like I felt like in the 80s a lot of the sci-fi stuff like that was dark, and then when you got to like sequels, they were never as dark. They got lighter in tone and mood. I don't know, that's just my take. Like RoboCop, for instance, just kind of got later and later in context, in my opinion. And Terminator, obviously, T2 was just went from this sci-fi thing to like this great action flick. It was great, but it was just the tones were completely different between the two.
I think part of that came because they saw how successful the first ones were, and they're like, what can we do to increase the audience? And then they looked, and if you think about it, the 80s were probably the decade that we've been alive that most severely restricted age content. So they're like, what can we change to make it, make it PG-13 instead of rated R, and bring in, you know, however many more tens of hundreds of millions of dollars when we get all the teenagers able to come in and spend their money now.
Yeah, it paid off. Like, it absolutely paid off, and really, the quality of the film was just good. It was just a different tone of a film. And
no, I mean, I agree completely. I mean, you look at that, you look at, like, Alien to Aliens.
Oh, God, yeah. That's a very good example. I'm just going to bring it up, even though, like, this is going to be its own discussion, but your other film was Predator, and going from Predator to Predator 2... Even those are two very different films.
Oh, yeah.
Predator, though, was, once again, another great choice, and I keep seeing Predator go on sale, and then the price goes up again. I'm like, fuck. So I'm waiting to buy Predator. I don't own the original Predator on Blu-ray, but that is a must-have for me.
Yeah, I mean, I would almost say that Predator 2 is up there, too. I almost like Predator 2 more than Predator 1.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I like Predator, it's still a lot of it now, especially going and watching it now, is just so much like macho 80s, you know, guy movie kind of shit. You know, like
just by virtue of fucking Jesse Ventura alone makes that.
Oh, Jesse, like, Ventura, Billy, you know, Carl Weathers, yeah. You know, it's just like, you know, when they do the arm clasp and each one of them is flexing.
It was, I mean, nowadays we'd call it like a bro flick or some shit, but yeah, that was like the most macho 80s thing. Like, they knew their audience. That was the thing. Like, they're like, we're going to have a very set audience, but those people that we're trying to get, every single one of them is going to love this film. So, yeah, I don't know. I will always, sexual Tyrannosaurus, the slack jawed line. There's so many.
It wasn't necessarily that Predator 2 was a better movie, but I liked the characters a lot better. You know, I liked Danny Glover. I liked, Ruben Blades. I liked, Bill Paxton. Yeah, I mean, Bill Paxton sells a lot of movies for me just by his performance.
Bill Paxton was, I will always say that Bill Paxton was criminally underrated in a lot of stuff that he did. He was so good at acting, and then when I saw Frailty and found out that he directed it, that kind of blew my mind too.
I really like that movie, and as far as I know, is he still the only actor who's been killed by a Predator, a Terminator, and an alien?
That would probably make sense. I can't think of anybody else that would fit into those.
I think the only one who would be close would be Lance Henriksen, and I don't remember him being in any Predator movies.
Oh, Lance. God damn it. There's another guy that if I find out he's in something, I will at least give it a shot because of the respect I have for Lance Henriksen. I just always do. Shit, man, I even liked, it was cheesy, but going back to Paxton, I really liked the Hatfields and McCoys, like, mini-series film that they did, like, him and Costner, I don't know.
I look at him, like, kind of like I look at, like, Woody Harrelson, where, like, when they first came out, they seemed like, they were good, but they seemed like a, kind of like a one-note actor, like, Woody was just goofy in Cheers, and he was funny, but that seemed to be, like, who he was. And now you look at, like, the number of different performances that they've done over the years, and you're like, holy shit, this guy has, like, one of the fucking broadest ranges I've ever seen an actor do. and you never would have expected it from him, you know, when he first came out.
And honestly, out of modern day successful actors, Woody never cracks like anybody's top 10. I'm like, how is he not in a top 10, if not even top 5? Like, he can do damn near anything. Because we've seen him do so many varied performances. I don't know. There's a guy that... I think in 10, 20 years, people look back and probably give him more credit than he's getting currently. Or at least I hope.
I mean, you look at like stuff from like Kingpin to White Men Can't Jump to what was the last Planet of the Apes movie to...
Natural Born Killers.
Nope. He did the one where he played the army officer who had to go around to families and tell them that their kids died in the war. I mean, he's just, you know, all
No Country for Old Men.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't he do like the shit with Jennifer Lawrence, Hunger Games? He did that too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that that's necessarily like the greatest example for a
no, it's not.
I mean, I love the books and I like the movies, but you know, I mean, he was okay in them. He didn't have a.
It's just a different role, you know.
Yeah, he had hair.
Yeah, something I can't say yet.
Oh, I mean, Zombieland.
Oh, I saw that in the theater. That was a good decision because I was kind of iffy. I'm like, yeah, I really like Woody, so give it a shot. And I have zero regrets about, like, that was a really just a fun movie to enjoy in the theater. Do you have anything that you want to add to Terminator and or Predator?
No, but when we get to your list, I do want to say I'm jealous of your number 5 because it didn't occur to me until after I saw it.
Ah, so, kicking things off with my number 5, Candyman, one of the only good horror movies from 1992, The Dying Deuce. I still actually have like the theme on my computer. It's one of my MP3s, and I do listen to it every so often because it was very different than... I don't know. It's actually kind of like happy music in some capacity until you relate it to Candyman, and then it has a whole other meaning, I feel.
I agree. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's a Clive Barker movie, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
So, A, it's Clive Barker. B, it introduced me to Tony Todd, who's fucking awesome. And C, it scared the shit out of me, you know, in a way that Bloody Mary never did, so...
I when people ask me what the scariest film I've ever seen is, I say Candyman. And people say, why? And I say, the first time you watch it, when you go to the bathroom immediately after seeing that film, I defy people to not, at the very least, look in the mirror just like an extra second with something in the back of their minds. You know, it may not frighten you, but you look in the mirror an extra second because the seed has been planted. And that's, I don't know, I consider that a success.
There are still things I do not say in mirrors, and that name is one of them, so.
Fair enough. And plus that ending with, I can't think of Virginia Madsen's character.
Yeah, I don't remember what her name was, but when he's like, and then all of a sudden she shows up all bloody, and I was like, yep.
Unfortunately, the sequels were so bad, but...
Well, not only that, but it's like each time they did it, they rewrote the origin. Even if it was just a little bit, it's like you're going through a completely different story.
And I got confused because I, you know, at times I'd try to be like, yeah, Candyman's about this. And I'm like, wait, no, it was about this. And then come to find out, it was like, it was... both were accurate, but... they did. They changed the origin way too much, but I don't know. It was a film that, do you feel that Candyman could be remade successfully, or is it a film that has to stay in the 90s?
Let's put it like this. I know you didn't like Get Out. Thematically, I wasn't necessarily the biggest fan of it, but I think it was a competently made movie.
It was. Absolutely.
Jordan Peele wants to remake Candyman, so I think he could do it.
Oh, yeah. You know, my issue always with Get Out isn't what people think it is. It's the fact that I'd seen that story, that similar story, the Stepford Wives story, or what. There's been so many examples. I'd seen the story so much that when people say, oh, what an original movie, it's like, no, it's not original in the least bit. The only thing that was different was that they added a racial component, and that is fresh in society's conscience at the moment. But it wasn't like an original fucking idea. That I mean, that's where I get to arguments.
I would say the same thing with Hereditary when we get to that. I mean, it was like so many people were saying, oh, I've never seen anything like this. And then I see it and I'm like, oh, I've seen a whole bunch of things like this.
Exactly. It's not to talk down about it, but to the idiots that have never seen it. Okay.
Like when you were talking about going to a 14-year-old and playing them these theme songs and seeing could they name the movie or would they just be familiar with it? How much of this new phenomenon that we're seeing where every good, for lack of a better word, horror movie that's coming out is being labeled as something new is just because the audience isn't familiar with, you know, the film stable that's out there for them to view?
That's a tough call. It's tough because, you know, kids now have access. They have instant access to any of this shit. Like, we're, you know, when we were kids, we did not have instant access to The Omen, you know, for example. We couldn't get on a computer and instantly find it on YouTube or whatever the case may be. So you would think that they'd be more knowledgeable, but much like us as kids, you know, we had the abilities to do certain things, but, you know, we wasted it on, you know, stupid shit, just the same as kids do now. That's a really good question that I don't know. I don't know whether underestimate or overestimate what kids really do now.
Not even necessarily kids, but you're just talking about, like, I guess, you know, they're kids to us, but, you know, kids, people in their young 20s and stuff. I mean, just because they have access to everything doesn't necessarily mean that they know what to look for.
Right, yeah, of course. I mean, if you don't necessarily... Yeah, you always need, like, a starting point. So, yeah, it's interesting to consider. I don't know. Good question. I don't know. But... Not, I mean, really, right now you have me thinking about a Candyman remake. I'll ask you this. Can you possibly think of anybody that'd be good for Candyman? Because I still think Tony Todd might be able to pull it off. Just throwing that out there.
He's a little old. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I kind of like, what the hell is the dude's name? Give me a second to IMDb this shit.
All right. While you're doing that, I will openly speculate about a few. I don't know. I'm not really sure because you need a guy probably in his 30s or 40s, a black dude in his 30s or 40s. Most of them that I know are actually like old. You know, think like Samuel L. Jackson, Denzel. You know, that age or. Really, like, young, up-and-coming guys in their 20s. I'm struggling to think of people in that particular age range.
I'm going to butcher this. He might be a little too old now, but I'm thinking Adewale, Akin Oye,
oh, yeah.
Raje, whatever, however you pronounce that name. I could really see him doing it. He's got the deep voice. He's a little, I think, maybe even more intimidating than Tony Todd was body type. But again, I haven't seen him recently. I mean, the last thing I saw him in was Suicide Squad, and he was completely covered up, so.
Yeah, he would be good. I'm trying to... I'm looking up another dude. He's probably going to be too old. Once again, I don't know how to pronounce his name. Let's see, he was born in 64. I was going to mention... Jimon Honsu, the black dude in Gladiator.
He does like fucking everything, man. He is like, let me get my name out there and do as many movies as I possibly can. Again, he's had some super great performances, and then he's been in just some shit where you're like, yep, he's making a paycheck.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, hell, he still really looks good for his age.
He's going to be in that Captain Marvel, Shazam, the DC one. He's the guy who gives the kid the magic.
Yeah, he's all right. So he's going to be an Aquaman, Captain Marvel, and Shazam.
Yeah, they were laughing because he's going to be in both Captain Marvel movies. Because Shazam, I guess, used to be Captain Marvel back before they had the copyright infringement. And they were like, okay, we'll just call him Shazam.
That's pretty, that's pretty interesting. What about, God, I don't even know how to begin to spell it for IMDb, but, like, the guy's name is, like, Chiwetel?
The guy who played Mordo in Doctor Strange? Yeah, he could do it, too. He's actually kind of... Oh, you know who would be really creepy if they got him? He's definitely older now, but like, could you imagine like Candyman with Forest Whitaker's like droopy eye?
Oh, that would be something. What about probably this would cost pretty much the whole budget, but if you get him, it would possibly be worth it. What about Idris Elba?
Yeah, I could see him doing it too. I mean, there's a lot of people with a lot of talent that could pull it off. I mean, it's nice to see, African-American or, black, for lack of a better word, actors of that age group, still being relevant and being able to get stuff since, I mean, Idris is not American, so you can't call him African-American.
Yeah, I'm so beyond the whole politically correct thing and fuck it. It is what it is, but he's 44, but he would fit. I still feel that he would fit the role really good. I don't know. There's a plenty of to choose from. It's just that right now I can't think of nearly enough of them. Like obviously, like somebody like Cuba Gooding Jr. would not do good there. That would just be really weird and awkward. So, I don't know.
Show me the honey.
I feel like at least 30% of the role of Candyman is in the voice.
Oh, yeah, definitely the voice. I mean, I could have seen, like, James Earl Jones doing it back, like 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That would have worked really well. All right, let's move forward here. Everything else that I had, even my honorable mention, we've talked about, with the exception of a film called May. Have you ever seen May?
I have not, no.
It was, think like early to mid-2000s. It had like Anna Faris and Jeremy Sisto in it. It was like this... Just this creepy, Angela Bettis was also in it. It was just a creepy movie about this young girl in her 20s, who just was fucked up since, early childhood, and she kind of falls in love, but then the guy just kind of bones her over, and she just has, like, this fucking sadistic breakdown, and... For such a small budget film, I mean, hell, it got a 6.7 on IMDb, which is surprising to me, actually. I thought it'd be a lot lower. So, I don't know. I would highly recommend it because it's got, like, I don't want to say lullaby, but maybe, like, when you think, like, lullaby-type music, like, you might get someplace close to where that soundtrack is. And it's in its own creepy way, so... That's why I put it there, and I don't imagine hardly anybody listening has seen May.
Gotcha.
So that wraps up the themes. I feel with the songs, I mean, realistically, there's only a couple songs that probably need to be discussed. Everything else is going to be just mentioning it because, how many people did this? Four people did this. It'd be silly because hell, my honorable mentions goes like 15 fucking deep. But you know, we can bring up the movies and or the songs and where they're from, and, you know, if there's any additional commentary, that's fine, but we can probably breeze through this one pretty quickly, I would say.
Yeah, no problem.
So we'll start off with Cece. She had the More Margaritas ringtone in Tusk, which I've forgotten what the hell that was. I looked it up. And God damn it, Cece. She always picks one thing, like whenever we work together, like on a blog or something, she always picks like one thing that I'm just like, God damn it, that's fucking irritating as hell to me. So she can't be surprised if she actually listens to this podcast and I say how much I absolutely hate this particular choice. But I did like most of everything else she had on here. Just, I don't know, Tusk grinded my gears in a weird way. That's all. And that song was just, yeah. And number four, she had Slept So Long by Jay Gordon from Queen of the Damned. Queen of the Damned, well, I mean, as you know, based on your list, I talked to Christy. She had Queen of the Damned. I'm apparently the only person that didn't have any Queen of the Damned chosen. But there's a lot of songs that people really liked from that particular soundtrack.
Oh, the one thing, I mean, we talked about yesterday was like... Jonathan Davis couldn't sing the song, so it was done by all different people. You know, like Slept So Long was one of the best by Jay Gordon. One of the reasons that it worked in the movie when they did the music was because Stuart Townsend actually sang the songs, you know, to the music. And then, you know, when they released it on the soundtrack, it was the singer singing it, or even in the movie, it was the singer singing it, but he didn't need to lip sync because he had actually been performing it. So they were able to just, you know, throw in somebody else's vocals for his performance.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't really, I didn't like Queen of the Damned, if I'm being perfectly honest. So that's probably why I didn't consider shit from the particular soundtrack. Probably the soundtrack I would actually enjoy on its own based on, you know, who's performing in it. But because I wasn't a huge fan of the film, I never really gave it much thought, I would say. And Christy, she only gave me one whole song on her list, but she said it'd be Cold from Static X from that soundtrack. So,
well, I mean, that was completely... that was just a song that they had on the soundtrack. It wasn't one of the ones that they made for the movie. So,
yeah, it's a good song. Okay. Moving on, CC's list, Midnight Rider and Devil's Rejects. That was on my list. It worked. It just worked. I liked it. As we said, basically you can pick and choose shit from House of Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects and make your own fucking top five list, no problem.
Yep.
Number two, she had I Still Believe, which is from Lost Boys, which was the shirtless saxophone guy who is just amazing. And I watch him perform like three or four times a year, like on YouTube. I'm like, I just want to hear and watch him play. So... I don't know. It was one of those... If you include that scene in a film today, it just doesn't work the same way. Right?
No, I don't think it does, because culture's evolved a little bit. I mean, I don't... Where would you really find, like, a boardwalk like that nowadays?
That's a good point, really. It was just that is something that will be kind of stuck in that particular era, but it was so effective. It was. Which leads to number one, which is like number one on my list, CC's list, your list. So three people's list. Cry Little Sister by Sisters of Mercy from Lost Boys. I'm going to guess this is like the definitive song in a horror film, like, because they play it throughout the movie. It's like a constant and it works the whole film.
It does. Right? I mean, it thematically it works. It's a good song. I mean, people have remade it, and it still sounds good, you know, with the remakes. I mean, it hits. It hits on all the right levels.
Did you hear, I believe it was Manson that recently redid it not too long ago.
Yeah, Manson did it. It wasn't too bad. There's another group who redid it called Seasons After. I think they did a better version than Manson's.
Manson's I kind of felt indifferently about. Like, I didn't hate it. I didn't love it, though, either. It wasn't something I was going to download, but...
It felt like a lot of his remakes, like the Devo stuff he remade, the you know, that kind of shit. So,
yeah, that makes sense. Let's see. So I mean, Cry Little Sisters, just it's gonna be it's probably I don't know. Like it was a perfect song for that film, and I can't wait for down the road. One of the top fives list I'm definitely looking forward to. I don't know if we're going to do it this year or maybe next year. But we're definitely doing a top five vampire film one.
Yeah, that'll be so interesting.
I'm really curious because, you know, the 80s and 90s alone just was stacked with really good shit, you know, from Lost Boys. John Carpenter's Vampire is criminally underrated. Interview with the Vampire, Blade, Bram Stoker's Dracula. The fuck was the Stephen King one?
Salem's Lot.
Salem's Lot. Was Fright Night? Fright Night was, wasn't it? Or am I thinking of something else?
Fright Night, well, I mean, both of them were vampire movies. The 80s one, okay. And then the 2000s aughts remake.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm really looking forward to it. Plus, I mean, you have the old school. You have Nosferatu. You have the Universal films, Dracula. So,
oh, friggin' Shadow of the Vampire.
Blackula. I mean, I've not seen Blackula, but that has been requested for me to do this coming October, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's one of those films I always meant to see. I've just never seen it, and I'm really, really excited for it. So, all right, hit up her honorable mentions. Me So Horny Ringtone from Disturbia. She had a thing for ringtones, and
yeah. Okay.
Yep, I'm just gonna bypass that. Six Different Ways by The Cure in the remake.
I still haven't seen that yet. It just got on HBO Go, though, so that's on my future within the next couple weeks.
I saw that last year. That came out last year, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw it with Dom, actually. I hadn't seen Dom in I don't even know how many years, and we talked about it, and I was like, yeah, let's get together and go watch it. So I really liked it. They're without any spoilers, I mean, obviously there's going to be some things you prefer from the original, some things you're going to, you know, like, it's a mixed bag, but all in all, I thought it was good. That's my non-spoiler.
No,
didn't help you in any way.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. I mean, like, one of the things that gets me from a sentimentality standpoint is my mom's current husband, because the one she married after she divorced my dad died of cancer. He's actually John Ritter's cousin. So, like, you know, they saw each other once in a while growing up, but, you know, he had, like, correspondence with him and stuff. So that's kind of cool. So, like, the fact that, you know, I go back and watch it and see, you know, John Ritter did a horror movie or miniseries, I'm like, yeah, it's cool. But, you know, at the same time, rewatching it recently, I'm like, yeah, that's definitely a child of the 80s, early 90s.
It is so dated. There are still really good scenes, but it really belongs, like, in a time capsule for that particular era. I will tell you one funny thing, though. When we went to the movies in Johnstown, I believe we went to the Johnstown one, You know, like how, you know, you go to the theater and each individual theater will have like a sign or something telling you like which movie's playing in it, just, you know, for dumbasses that aren't paying attention. And we found it and they, you know, it had Stephen King's It. And then they had a picture of Tim Curry's Pennywise, not the new guy. I was like, somebody didn't do their due diligence with this, or somebody just really, really, really wants to keep the Tim Curry memory alive. I couldn't tell which.
Or they all float down there.
Oh, they really do. They do. Moving on. Lauren, I don't know, she only gave me 4 songs, as far as I can tell from everything she told me. Goodbye Horses from Silence of the Lambs. That was like the Buffalo Bill scene, right?
Yep, yep.
That actually, I knew she was going to do it. Because I feel like that was like the first YouTube video she ever sent me was for Goodbye Horses. I was like, all right, cool. Like, so I expected that from her.
I won't lie, if I had enough room in my microphone cord right now, I'd be doing that in this room.
Fantastic. Number 3, she had Sweet Home Alabama from the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which, yeah, I mean, I remember it fit. I think that was probably the only song that I can recall from that movie. But it worked. It was, who was it? Jessica Biel, right?
Yeah, it's a classic.
And yeah, that was another movie I saw with, I saw a lot of movies with Dominic, apparently. Huh.
The movie's about serial killers with Dom. What is that saying?
We have a very unique relationship, I would say. Number 2, she had Joanna from Sweeney Todd, which I feel people could pick any number of songs from Sweeney Todd, like, if you're a fan of it. There's people that don't like Sweeney Todd, but if you're a fan of it, there's any number of songs to pick from that.
I think I find that a weird choice, though, because that's like the one romantic song from the movie when everything else is more kind of,
yeah,
typical plot wise, you know, like have a bite of priest, you know, Sweeney Todd the demon, yeah, kind of shit. So who knows?
Yeah, it was an odd choice. I absolutely agree with that. I was kind of curious. I didn't have a chance to contact her because by the time I woke up, got this list, I think they're like 7 or 9 hours difference out in Scotland. So obviously she should be sleeping. So I didn't reach out to her to be like, what the fuck? But she completely redeemed herself with number 1, at least in my book. She totally redeemed herself with Dream Warriors by Dokken, Nightmare on Elm Street 3. God damn it. I listen to this song way too often, but yeah. Out of all the Nightmare on Elm Street songs.
Oh, see, that's, yep. Yep, that's definitely, you know, it's the 80s iconic horror movie song.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Like, that sums it up. And fuck, man, it's not like Dokken. I don't really know shit else from Dokken. I know they had a couple other songs, but it's the only one I know of.
I mean, I think that's the reason that the dog I got from the pound was named Dokken. It's because of that song from that movie.
Really? You had a dog named Dokken? That's fantastic. I did,
yeah. He's a golden retriever. He died a while back, but he was big. He got up to about 150 pounds before he died.
Shit, that's a big boy. Huh. All right. We'll move on to your list, which you have quite, you have a list, and then you have good honorable mentions. So you hit up Bad Moon Rising by CCR, American Werewolf in London. Absolutely iconic.
Oh, yeah. That's like one of the scenes where I pictured, you know, when I was asking you, are we doing theme songs or theme music, or are we doing songs? And you said, let's do both. Because I was like, that scene right there, you know, to that makeup was, you know, changed horror movies back in the 80s.
In that movie, did they also, had Blue Moon, right?
They did. Yep. There's another good one, too. Shit, I should have put that.
Damn. Yeah, I'm regretting. I don't think I put it either. But yeah, I mean, both those were probably the two biggest songs from that film. But goddamn, that was one of the original five horror films I saw as a child. So I will always have a special place in my heart for that film. And yeah, it actually kind of scared the shit out of me a little bit whatever, I don't know, 5 year old or whatever. But
I think I saw one of the songs on your list came from the sequel. And
yeah,
unlike the sequel, this still holds up as a good movie.
Yeah, the sequel, basically, the only redeeming quality is the French actress who is hot as hell. Julie something?
Julie Delpy, yeah.
Yeah, she is great. I admire her work. So, once again, you chose something that I was totally jealous of that I have downloaded on my computer at number 4, After Dark, Tito and the Tarantula from Dust Till Dawn.
Oh, that not only is that just a great scene, but that song with Selma Hayek is like one of like the most seductive things I can think of in like my entire life. She's just so perfect, it's not even funny. Honey, don't listen to this if you're ever going to pay attention to this podcast.
Yeah, it was perfection. It was probably the scene, I would say that's probably the most memorable scene from that film. Right?
I mean, I love the break. I would have loved going into it and not knowing that it was going to be a vampire movie in the back end. Because there are people I've heard of who, like, knew nothing about this movie, and they go in and they're watching, and they're like, holy shit, it's two completely different movies. So they either love it or hate it, depending upon, you know, what they went in to see it for. I guess there were people who didn't know that it was like a Tarantino Robert Rodriguez movie in the first half, so they were just expecting it to be all vampires. I'm like, what the fuck is this shit? And then there are people who were expecting, you know, Pulp Fiction, and they got vampires in the back end. They're like, what the hell is this shit? I'm like, those are two great tastes that go great together. That's what the hell that is.
Yeah, like, you combined two fucking great things and made it into one, and you added Tom Savini as a guy named Sex Machine, and George Clooney in by far his biggest badass role. Harvey Keitel just still being awesome. Yeah,
Harvey Keitel really sells the movie with his performance in that, too. I mean, grounding it and making it believable that, you know, that family would get stuck in that situation.
And Tarantino, I know he takes a lot of shit for his acting, but I thought he was really good at it. And I mean, one of the favorite things, me and my buddy Ron, he's like, hey, do you mean what you said back there? Like, just, I don't know, Richie lived in that weird dream world, and he did well, I thought.
Yeah, no, it wasn't bad at all. I mean, the only one I might have had a problem with was the kid, the boy, but
yeah.
I mean, even then, I mean, it's probably like his first or second movie, so yeah, no, not a bad performance, just, yeah, not up to everybody else.
Right, I mean, well, yeah, you're in a film with like fucking 4 or 5 heavy hitters, so
I mean, that's a mention 4 or 5 versions of Cheech, so.
Oh shit, yes, Cheech. Oh, god damn it. That was something that I actually remembered the whole his whole
monologue, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So good stuff. Number 3, you had Time Is On My Side, Rolling Stones, Fallen. I didn't even think about it, so I applaud that choice.
Again, that's another one that was like between Elias Koteas singing at the beginning and then John Goodman doing it at the end. I was like, yeah, that's another one where the song makes the fucking movie. I mean, not to mention that it wasn't a bad movie, it was a little more nihilistic than I needed in my life when I watched it, so it kind of got me down at the end. But going back, I'm like, yeah, this is a really good and underrated movie in the horror genre.
Absolutely. Number 2, you have 99 Problems. I have not seen the Fright Night remake. I didn't look this up. This is not like the Jay-Z song, right?
They took the same riff.
Okay.
But they set it to a like an old school blues version almost like something that you would hear from like B.B. King or Lou Guthrie. And it's not the same lyrics, but it's like the same kind of refrain. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. You know.
Okay. I actually really like Jay-Z's collaboration with Linkin Park.
That's amazing. Anyways, you know, I got done with Fright Night, and I was like, yeah, it was a pretty good remake. You know, I liked Anton Yelchin. I liked Colin Farrell actually did really good at a job as Jerry Dandridge. You know, the way they used David Tennant as the Roddy McDowall part was pretty ingenious, you know, in the updated version. I was like, it was okay. And then they had this song for the credits, you know, it was the playing. I was like, oh, wow, that's like, not only is that a really good song, but they're like kicking it out on a bang. So,
yeah, I'll have to, that might be a film for October as well for me.
I think it's worth it. I mean, the first one is really dated. I still like part two, even though it's dated as well. But, yeah, I think the remake was actually really good. And, you know, unfortunately, we won't see anything else from Anton Yelchin, so we're limited to the few things he did.
I really liked him, too, as an actor. I was a big fan, so that is a bummer, no doubt. All right, your honorable mentions. You had some really good, you had a nice mixture of old school and newer stuff. Christ, I'm probably going to mispronounce this. It's Bach Toccata. Is it Fugue?
Yep.
In G minor, which if people listening to this don't know what it sounds like, rest assured you have heard this before.
Picture like Vincent Price shit.
Right. It was like one of the most classic horror sounding songs out there. So if you don't know it, look it up. Bach Toccata. Fugue in G minor.
It might actually be D minor, but you know, whatever.
By the time you type in Bach Toccata in YouTube, it will come up.
Exactly.
So, and then you followed up with Beethoven's Midnight Sonata. Shit, what was that in again?
You're gonna make me go look it up. It's been in a lot of stuff too.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a specific example, and I'm like, I'm drawing a complete blank at the moment. Well, I mean, while you're looking it up, I mean, we already talked about, you basically had all the original music from Queen of the Damned soundtrack, which we kind of discussed earlier, but that seems to be like a big fan, like horror fans really seem to enjoy that, so... Good choice. Paint It Black, I'm guessing from Stir of Echoes, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I just watched Stir of Echoes within this month. I watched Stir of Echoes again because I had to get the nasty taste of Unsane out of my mouth.
Oh, all right. So Moonlight Sonata, the big horror ones that it was in Interview with the Vampire. I don't know if you necessarily consider that horror, but there you go. Psycho 2, but the big one was Misery.
Oh, okay. Psycho 2 may not be a heavy hitter, but the other two, and yeah, I definitely consider Interview with the Vampire horror. I do. I have to. So, okay, yeah. Misery. Good shit. Speaking of Interview with the Vampire, you had Sympathy for the Devil.
Yep.
And then Sweet Dreams by Marilyn Manson from House
on Haunted Hill.
Jesus, yeah. There's like three H's. I'm like, I'm going to get these wrong. Yeah, that. And you and I just talked about it yesterday, but I don't know. Very underrated remake. Plus, the original was good, so I don't know. All good stuff.
Yep. I mean, there are many more I was thinking about, but I was like, you know, let's narrow it down. But yeah, like I had Tiptoe Among the Tulips on there, you know, originally. I don't remember where I put it. It just probably fell off when I was
moving
shit over.
That's what Lauren's other one was going to be. So remember I said I didn't have a number five? She told me it was Tiptoe. So
okay, well, I'm glad you're good, Lauren. It's a good thing Kent remembered. We made sure you got all 100% in.
Memory. All right. For my top five, I had Queen's Don't Stop Me Now from Shaun of the Dead. Once again, is it a horror movie?
Good choice.
You know. I chose Bad to the Bone from Stephen King's Christine because that movie actually had a lot of good music, but I think Bad to the Bone was probably the best one out of them for that film.
You know, that's a Stephen King movie I still haven't seen. And I've seen most of them.
Huh, no shit. That was like one of like five films as a kid I watched. Every time I went to my cousin's house, we'd play Nintendo, and then eventually we'd watch Christine. So I saw it so many years, and I'll tell you, you've seen Home Alone, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, so the old guy.
The shovel bent in South...
Yeah. He is in Christine, and I never correlated those two guys as the same guy until much, much, much later in life. I was like, no shit. And he was also in, Escape from Alcatraz or whatever the fuck it was with...
Clint Eastwood?
Yeah. Yeah, he's in that too. Moving on, I had Freebird because that's how Devil's Rejects ends, and it's
Freebird, man.
Yeah, it's Freebird, it's poetic, it's, I don't know. Then Dream Warriors, which have already been discussed, Cry Little Sister, already been discussed. My honorable mentions was just me throwing a bunch of shit at a wall, but Here I Go Again by Whitesnake, and I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. Anything was in Nightmare on Elm Street 4. I can't even remember who the hell sings it. It's just cheesy music from that era, but I always liked it. Paint It Black, already talked about. Don't Fear the Reaper. I feel it was in other stuff, but the only thing I could really remember was the beginning of The Stand.
Okay.
That had the sax guy. People are... I don't know. Is the song called People Are Strange or is it just called Strange?
Either way, I recognize it. And that would be from Lost Boys as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, anything from Lost Boys apparently like hit really well music-wise. So, Hush, I believe, was from the first I Know What You Did Last Summer.
I thought of that song and I couldn't think of any movies that it was in, but I was like... It was completely unrelated. I was like... That would be like a great song to put like a serial killer murder to in like a TV show.
Oh, yeah. It really is. And I believe it's been remade a few times. So, yeah, I looked up. I always, I don't know. It's a good song.
This random thoughts that occur to me when I drive into work.
Much like everybody chose Queen of the Damned soundtrack, I went for the Tales from the Hood soundtrack because... If you were a fan of like the gangsta rap from like the mid-90s, this was actually a really good soundtrack. If you were not into it, you would absolutely hate the soundtrack. So it's, you know, entirely based on taste and music. But at the time, I loved that shit. So it really did set a good tone for that particular film.
You know, I was reading a list, and I don't remember when it was relatively recently. And they were talking about like soundtracks and horror movies, and they threw Judgment Night up there, and they're like, you know, it's not really a horror movie, you know, although if you want to kind of stretch it, Dennis Leary's character is kind of scary, you know, in it. But they said, you know, for what it was one of the best soundtracks. And I started looking through the sound, and I was like, holy shit, yeah, that was a good soundtrack for the time.
I don't think I ever saw it.
It's not a horror movie, but it's definitely worth catching up on. It was like Emilio Estevez, Cuba Gooding Jr., Dennis Leary.
Holy shit. Wow, you just made me realize something, a huge omission on my list. I'm going to mention it right now. The whole Maximum Overdrive soundtrack, because it's all AC/DC, guilty pleasure film that I watch at least once a year. I usually save it for a day where I'm kind of pissed off or just had a rough day. Put that on. It cheers me up. I don't know. I had Rocky Mountain Way. That was also in Devil's Rejects. I had AWOL Nation sale, and I can't even remember what the hell the name of the film was. It was a horror movie with Christian Slater that was on Netflix. I don't know if it's still on it, but it was such a weird scene. Like, he's getting a lap dance from this younger chick. I don't know. It's just a really weird scene. I was like, why the hell of all songs did they choose Sale? But then, like, a week later, it was still in my head. I'm like, all right, I guess they did a good job in the fact that it kind of stuck with me. But, yeah, hell, I'm looking right now, and it wasn't the Nymphomaniac films. I don't know. Maybe it's Playback. I think it actually was a film called Playback. Yeah. Made in 2012. Not a great movie. It really wasn't, but that scene just stuck out. Moving on. Sympathy for the Devil, already talked about. Midnight Rider, talked about it. Show Me the Way to Go Home from Jaws.
Good call.
Probably
good call.
My favorite scene in that fucking... Well, between then, like, the USS Indianapolis speech. I don't know. That was like 10 powerful minutes of on that film, in my opinion. Jeepers Creepers, already talked about. Hip to Be Square. Nobody mentioned Hip to Be Square from American Psycho.
You know what I didn't think of either? It was Singing in the Rain from Clockwork Orange.
Oh, yeah. That film had a good soundtrack, really. Yeah, that... Fine. It's a late entry, but yeah. I had Willie Nelson's Bring Me Sunshine. Do you know what film that may have been from?
No, not off the top of my head. I do not.
It was at the tail end of The Crazies.
Oh, okay.
I was like, what a perfect song for the end of that fucking movie. Oh.
I really like that movie.
Midnight Special by CCR. That was in the Twilight Zone movie at the very end where Lithgow's getting put in the ambulance.
Yep.
And Bad Moon Rising, and as you allude to, Mouth by Bush in American Werewolf in Paris.
I fucking love that song. I'm ambivalent about the movie. Although I did see it twice in theaters.
Did you really? Oh, shit. Well,
you know, we had been looking forward to it when it came out, and I remember Jay, Chuck, and I drove down to Crossgates opening day on Christmas after we opened up our presents to go see it. And then you were kind of like, well, maybe it wasn't as bad as I remembered, so you went and saw it again, like, a month later. And you're like, no, it was about as bad as I remembered.
I believe I rented it on, like, on-demand pay-per-view, like, back when Time Warner first introduced, like, hey, you can rent a movie for, like, $6, and you don't have to leave home. And I was like, okay, I don't have a car, I accept that. And that was one of the movies I bought, and it was not worth the money I paid. But, I don't know, we'll always have Julie Delpy.
Well, not to mention the one mom from Modern Family was the hot chick who got killed in the cemetery too. So back when she was younger. Oh,
yeah. She was in something else that I was like, holy shit, that's, you know, I recognize her and I can't.
I can never remember her name.
Shit. I have it coming up now. Julie Bowen.
Yep. That's it.
Yeah. I don't know. What the hell the other thing was? Oh, it's Happy Gilmore. I never put that together that she was the chick in Happy Gilmore.
Okay.
I don't know. Just weird to me. With that being said, that wraps up the music part of this whole thing. We're going to hit up Hereditary for like 3 to 5 minutes, and then we're going to wrap this up. So Hereditary, good enough film. It was a possession film, so if you're into possessions, this might be a movie for you. It had really good acting. I don't know, what do you got to say about it?
I would quantify it with, if you're into possession movies, it's not a possession movie for 85% of it. So, or at least apparently not a possession movie for 85% of it. So don't go in and expecting, you know, like The Exorcism of Emily Rose or something like that. No, I really liked it. It wasn't bad by any means. I think a couple of the choices at the end turned it down from something that could have been, you know, one or two of a kind to just a great movie. But the performances were awesome. Like we said in the blog, everybody was really good. But I think Toni Collette and Gabriel Byrne did outstanding. Ann Dowd too. So really good.
Ann Dowd just did what Ann Dowd does. Like, she is excellent in everything I ever see her in.
Yeah, she's very solid, and I don't think she gets enough respect for that. So respect.
Yeah, she was also in The Leftovers, and she was in a film called Compliance, which was kind of horror-ish, and but it wasn't like scary, but it was creepy, you know. So I don't know. I really like Ann Dowd. I thought, you know, the two kids also were. I thought Charlie played her role great, and I wasn't sold on the boy who played Peter, but as it kept going, I thought he did. His performance kept escalating properly.
And Charlie was really good. I mean, I could definitely tell that, you know, this was a person playing somebody with problems. And that's not necessarily easy for kids to do. Peter, I thought, was pretty good. There was only, like, one of the crying scenes came off a little kind of false. You know, like, forcing myself to cry because the scene needs it rather than, but there were a couple other scenes where, like, he's crying. I'm like, okay, this actually feels real. So maybe it was just, you know, a bad take for that one scene.
Not only that, I mean, let's face it, we've seen so many examples of males who just struggle to cry on screen. So, hell, I mean, I already made fun of Ed Norton earlier, but yeah, I mean, it happens. And I agree. Like, they're, probably wasn't the best take, but it worked. I guess I'll say this as a spoiler alert, just for anybody who hasn't seen this yet. I don't know. Fast forward to the last 2 minutes of this podcast to get anything else that you may need, but the rest of this is probably going to be spoilerific. All right. After looking at responses on the blog, was Annie possessed? Like, wasn't the spirit in Peter? So if Peter was possessed, was Annie possessed by some other demon or something? Like, how else was that bitch floating?
All right, from what I understand, and I had to look up a couple of things to just clarify stuff. Like, Peter didn't get the spirit in him until he killed himself or was almost dead when he jumped out the window and you saw that little light going around and then it zoomed in on his back and disappeared. You know, kind of like the reflection thing that Charlie had been doing earlier in the movie.
Okay. So he wasn't possessed when he was in school headbutting the fucking desk?
No, I think it was more manipulating him to get him into, like, a vulnerable state.
Oh, so basically the spirit kind of traveled from Charlie to Annie, then to Peter.
Or like, imagine that they're not actually being possessed, but the spirit is, you know, like, manipulating their bodies. Okay. You know, like that one scene where his arm gets at that really weird angle and they move his head to the side before he falls down on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, like somebody's actually outside moving him, yeah, kind of shit.
Like a puppet master type shit.
Yeah. No, I mean, okay. Annie, it's a little bit more, but from what I'm gathering, you know, it's not even, you know, like, really a spirit. It was Charlie, you know, who was brought back to be in Peter's body because the demon that they were pledging her to wanted a male body, but they wanted to give Charlie, you know, for whatever reason, the benefit. So, I don't know. It was fucking weird, and I don't know if I necessarily like the movie well enough to go back and rewatch it multiple times to figure out 100% of everything that was going on. But and then again, you also have the fact that it seems to imply that mental illness is a factor in the whole thing. So who knows how much of that was actually happening and how much of that was just in their minds. Yeah.
Yeah. That was definitely a an implication. Like, that was one thing I did like. They gave you bits and pieces of the story, and it was all there for you. But if you just stepped out for a minute or two, you could have easily missed something that would have been very important for the ending. So, shit, what was I? I don't even remember where I was going to go with my next. So all right. I believe it was Annie saw, like, the nude guy in the house at one point. Was that the guy, or was that a spirit?
I don't know. I mean, that was one of my questions, too, because you get to the end, everybody in the treehouse is nude. She sees one, and she flips out, and that's, like, right before I think she fucking loses it, and or right after, was that right after she roasted her husband?
I think it was right in that time frame.
And then Peter wakes up and he goes downstairs and he sees nude people in this house too. So I'm wondering if, like, are those nude ghosts or were there people that just there to scare him? But I'm thinking there were nude spirits in there that were fucking with the two of them.
To which I'm then wondering, all the people we saw in the treehouse, how many of them were people versus spirits?
Yeah, again, I think it's supposed to be one of those things where, hey, here's no real physical answer. This is just supposed to be kind of trippy and, you know, is it in your mind? Is it in their mind? Blah, 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 kind of thing. But they, you know, when they go and they say, hey, you know, we're giving you to this devil and it's, you know, a whole possession thing, to me that kind of negates, you know, well, you know, so much of this up till now has been whether or not you think this is actually happening.
Yeah. Now, I asked about the dog, and Cece claims that the dog was seen multiple times in the film.
The only time I remember seeing that fucking dog is when he opened the door and the dog was standing outside it, and then the door gets slammed and the dog fucking dies. I'm like...
Right. Yeah, that's the only time I remember, and, like, you know, the stubborn asshole in me is like, no, I'm gonna fucking rewatch that and just double check. But I was like... No, I'm not going to waste 2 hours of my time. I'm okay just being wrong, but I really don't remember that dog appear. I'm just calling bullshit. If they owned a dog, that dog would have been fucking barking throughout, like, half of this movie when all the crazy shit, like, the seance shit. Like, right?
Yeah. Unless the dog just, like, lived outside and somehow made its way in for that one scene. Yeah, no.
I mean, in horror, we're taught that dogs can sense this stuff. So, if anything, that dog would have been going apeshit throughout a good chunk of this film. So, I don't know. Once again, I'm not going to rewatch it anytime soon just to clarify it one way or the other. But I just don't recall it. And it's, in my mind, it actually makes more sense for that to have just been a dream thing or whatever, rather than the dog actually existing. Makes more sense to me.
Yeah, I agree.
And then, like, did they ever explain why you had to, like, be, like, beheaded, or why the sacrifices, like, you know, the grandma had to be beheaded, Annie was beheaded, Charlie was beheaded. Was it strictly like the females had to be beheaded?
I have no idea. I mean, if you remember, Charlie's head ends up on the body of the Jesus thing that they rig up in the attic of the treehouse. So I don't know. I mean, I look at it like this: it was a good movie. There were some good performances, great performances even. I think it could have gone down as being one of in a few movies where if they had skipped showing that it was a strict double plot and left it more up to, is this occurring because of mental issues, you know, hereditary, or is this occurring because it's supernatural? They give you the answer. I think if they left it ambiguous, kind of like the Babadook did. It could have become, you know, a classic. As it is, it's just really good. But by veering into that, hey, this is what the definitive answer is, but we're not going to give you all the answers to go with it, it just made it good rather than great.
I can appreciate that, especially since you referenced Babadook, which I own the special edition Blu-ray, and the front cover opens up to be like a pop-up book. It's awesome. That case is fucking awesome. Shit.
You give that to your like your nephews or something. Be like, hey.
Like I've looked online to see if they ever made a book, and probably there just wasn't going to be enough interest to warrant manufacturing it. But god damn it, I really wanted. I don't know how much I would have been willing to pay, but it would have been a substantial amount for a stupid children's pop-up book. I'm just saying, I would have.
Yeah, I mean, I really like that movie, and I think, you know, they did a good job of the ending. You know, you can read into it either, A, it was all in the mom's head and she was just suffering from mental illness, or B, there's an actual physical spirit there that they have chained up in their basement they're feeding worms to now. This, you know, yeah. Basically said, hey, we're going to make you think it's going to be one way for 90% of the movie, and then we're going to veer into a different direction, and that's the way it's going to be, but we're not going to give you all of the answers to go along with that. Which, hey, sometimes you're going to see a movie and they're not going to give you all the answers. I can live with that.
Right, and yeah, that's fine. Totally fine. All in all, it's a good but not great movie, Hereditary is. And if you like possession movies, then this is something to recommend. If you're not really 100% sure and you don't want to devote 2+ hours... you're not going to regret skipping it, I don't think. Like, it's not a must-see.
No, I would agree. It's not a must-see. It was probably one of the better movies from last year, though. Or was it early this year? Whatever it was, it was one of the better horror movies I've seen in the last couple of years. But it's not... Maybe top five, not top three, so...
Right, it's... For a film that hit the theaters in the horror genre, it was really good. But I will still stick to this. Most horror movies that make it to the theater are actually usually fucking terrible. It's usually you have to dig for the good modern horrors that are more, you know, low budget or whatever, that just didn't get a theatrical release. That's just my opinion, because, I mean, look at... What the fuck is a Hellfest that they keep advertising for? You know that's going to be shit. The Gallows was complete shit. Most of these films that focus just on teeny boppers are really bad. Not in like a good way either.
The last one that got a decent amount of coverage that I thought was pretty good was Lights Out.
Which I still haven't seen. Yeah. That's on the list.
Yeah, it's worth it.
Yeah. I guess that started from a short film, and then it kind of expanded upon. And
yeah, the short film. Short film was pretty good, too.
All right, so we'll wrap up this Hereditary thing. Don't know what we're on draw later on this week to see who gets picked for October. Hopefully somebody picks something a little bit more accessible to people. Really, there's not much else that's going to be at Redbox, I don't think, anyways, in the horror genre right now. So, I don't know. I don't know what to expect. Some people are going to want newer shit, some people are going to want older shit. I don't know. I'm kind of curious what's coming up. I can reveal, though, that for October, our top five list that we'll be writing about at 9deuce.com, and then we'll also be doing the podcast later on in October, we're going to be talking about top five zombie films. There's a lot of them. There's a shitload of
them. And I mean, to get it out of the way, we're talking about all types of zombies, too, even if they're not necessarily zombies, you know, like... infected or what have you.
Right. I mean, there's, you know, even something like, you know, the Reanimator, anything that's basically like a reanimated corpse, I guess, kind of like, Basically, you could make an argument for a ton of movies that aren't necessarily exactly a zombie film, but close enough. So I'm excited. Obviously, I will be shocked if Night of the Living Dead isn't on every single person's list. I feel that's the one film that has to be on everybody's list. If it's not on somebody's list, I'm really going to question them.
I don't know. With only five, there's a lot of tough choices.
Yeah, but god damn it, that movie still, I don't know, to me that movie still holds up. There's so many parts of it that holds up, and Dwayne Jones, man, I love that guy so much, so I'm not saying it's going to be my number one, but it has to be in my top five. I don't even know what else is going to be in my top five. I feel like possibly 28 days or 28 weeks, because I like both of them.
I mean, let's stop discussing. We don't want to push too much. We don't want to, you know, ruin people's ideas before they get to the month.
Yeah,
I already have four, so.
Dude, I mean, thinking Tony Todd redid Night of the Living Dead. That wasn't even bad. I mean, it's not going to crack top five, but, you know, I'm thinking, like, the Return of the Living Dead franchise, and there's just so many. So, very excited for that. With that being said, we have gone on a long-ass time. I'm probably going to have to cut this into two parts for the podcast. Do you have any other thoughts you want to say before we wrap this up?
No, I'm good. No. It was nice to talk to everybody. I hope you enjoy listening to my opinions.
I don't really care if you enjoyed it as long as you're listening. I am a selfish person that just wants hits. I'm an awful human being. Chris, on the other hand, is a much nicer person than I am. So, yay! With that, we're going to wrap up our first horror-themed podcast. I'm kind of excited. I like doing this. We'll be back again in late October to do the next one. So with that, I say goodnight to everybody.